The Garnet Wager is a show where two players compete in a fantasy-style competition while watching episodes of The Genius. Their drafted fantasy genius contestants earn or lose points through their actions, leading to an ultimate victor at the end of the season. But points don't tell the whole story. You never know when some fantasy garnets will turn the tables. Listeners are invited to play Fantasy Genius as well, through rules and criteria provided via links in the show notes. May you chase those ugly victories and beautiful defeats, even from the safety of your home. This is the Garnet Wager. Begin.
Friends and folks, and welcome back to the Garnet Wager. We are here for Season 3 of The Genius. Season 3 is here at last. I'm Six Detmar.
I'm Alan Ibrahim.
And boy, have we got one for you today, folks. We have one. I'm not going to say a good one or a bad one. We just have one. You know, we have a normal one. That's what they say.
We're having a one, and it's The Genius. It's Season 3, Episode 1, baby. Season 3, Black Garnet.
Have an Episode 1. How immediately do you want to, like, do some, like, preamble? It feels like it's good podcasting to kind of work our way up to stuff, right?
Yeah.
That's good entertainment value rather than me just getting immediately, like, busting out, you know, the paprika and then going from paprika to hot chili sauce.
Well, we have to earn the spice, I think. And it's important
because
you know, we went into this season expecting it to be objectively better and to continue to fall in love with people and to be surprised and impressed. And, like, I don't know, guys. I don't know the Garnet Wager listeners. Like, what are you, Genius, what are you doing? Why'd you bring all these men on here? Why are they all terrible? Why are so many of them shitty? Why are these games, like, kind of, like, dumb, like, kind of super easy and, like, not that fun to watch?
And, well, I mean, the first episode, the first main match, like, is usually fairly easy to comprehend. Like, you gotta ease people into The Genius, especially because this time they don't really have a, I'm not going to assume gender, so I'm going to say a senpai, mm-hmm. right? I'm going to go Japanese. They don't have, like, a genius senpai to be like, hey, here's how The Genius is. Don't worry, we'll ease you into it. Just, you know, follow my lead. Huijong couldn't do that because he clearly did not know how The Genius works because he immediately got eliminated in this first episode. So I feel like they're in a different position where they have people, like, not only do they have people who are, like, almost all of them are first-time Genius players. One of them is a one-episode Genius player. But also, a lot of them are players who... I mean, they're newbies, right? That's the thing, is we have a bunch of players who are fresh faces who don't even... Like, even a lot of the players up until now are players who maybe haven't done The Genius before, but they're, you know, celebrities. They've done other shows. They're used to being entertainers, and they're used to also, often, game shows. And you're getting just fucking people who don't have experience with anything walking in here. You're getting people whose intro videos are them saying, like, haha, sorry, I'm gonna win the whole thing. And it's like, buddy, you don't know what the fuck you're in for.
Yeah.
So I feel like they had to dial the first game back to make it understandable, and I feel like the first game was fine. The first main match, like, I so far my problem is not with the rules, right?
Right. Do you remember the name of the game?
It's the fruit stand game.
Right. So it's kind of interesting. Like, it makes sense. I grasped it pretty quickly. I just constantly feel like the middle of main matches, I just don't care what's happening. Especially in this one where it's like, hey, we don't really know. Nobody's trying to make big plays in week one. Everybody is trying to play safe. I think Huijong actually straight up says, yeah, nobody's going to try to win this. There's nobody who's, like, gunning for first, really. We're all gunning for the middle of the road because nobody gets eliminated that way, and we can have nice teamwork, and nobody has to get fucked over. This is great.
Mm-hmm. And also, even if, like, even if you were going to go for a big play, you're not going to do it in the middle of the main match. There's no reason to do it then.
Right. And what they end up doing, which ends up being kind of cool, is they save a lot of the big plays for, like, the reveals, like, the last minute. And their plays end up being basically like, I told you I would do one thing and then I did another thing, right? Like,
I mean, that's all the game really
true,
allowed
that's,
for.
That's what the play is. It's more a thing about the game than it is about the players, I guess.
You gotta think of the first main match and maybe even the first couple of main matches as like icebreakers, right? The game isn't the point. The point is to draw stuff out of the people, out of the players, so that you can understand who they are.
And so that the players can understand who each other are, too, yeah.
Right, and so that's how we figured out that this season could have, so it's subtitled Black Garnet, but it could have the subtitle League of Fuckboys.
The League of, truly
all these
the
men
League of
suck.
Heels. All these guys
they all are shit.
Who do we start, so okay, let's talk about the beginning of the episode, because I think the cold open summarizes a lot of my problems with the guys on this so far. The cold open is a like monologue about like, it's like this lecture from this American person who's talking about what it means to be a genius, and the genius allows you to experience the limits of human psychology and all this stuff. And then we get the...
And then there's like this framing device of like police surveillance.
It's so weird. Like you're in an elevator and the camera in the elevator sees you on your phone and it's like, that's the guy. That's Hui Zhang. What's up?
His spatial awareness is incredible. What?
It that stuff's all very strange, but then we get into the theme, which, well, no, the theme is after the cold open, excuse me. Everybody gets introduced, we have our whole cast, we went down the list of people before, and...
You know, let's go ahead and do the theme, because I feel like we'll have our little segment up front, maybe chronologically it isn't the same, but thematically, let's talk about, like, the segments of the show, and this part is sort of like the authorial voice, right?
Yeah.
This is the produced parts. And so we never ended up talking about, I would write it down in notes and then never bring it up, the fact that the season 2 intro was like this dude getting trapped in like a chessboard that was also a desert, and the knights were these like stone murder gargoyles. It was weird.
Very weird.
It was a lot, especially coming from season 1 where it's just like, oh, it's a maze. Like, oh, okay. And this is
the
like...
The guy runs through the maze and then he just...
It's like, a pawn is trying to murder you. Like, all right.
Yeah, they're escalating big time.
Yeah, they are. Tell me about the season 3 opening, Alan.
So, I need to, like, flash back a little bit, but as I remember it, it's like it's kind of a heist. It's kind of like, there's like more than one character now.
There's like, yeah, it's like there's like playing cards and like people like squaring off, and there's like a moment where it like, you know, it's cutting from perspective to perspective of people like in various states of like time locked panic as cards fly everywhere, and then it turns into like Doom the movie first person with like this dude with a red gun shooting
hell
people.
Yeah,
I don't know what the fuck that was.
It becomes like Sin City for a second. You're just like, whoa. Like, okay, you're having fun. All of this introduction feels like they are, like, they upped the budget and they're just having more fun with it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I don't know if you said Sin City or Sim City, as in Will Wright's Sim City, but I'm going to choose to believe the latter.
I said the latter, and then I corrected myself to the former, but let's say both, yeah.
Anyway, so that's out of the way, and then we just get to the humans, the meat bags, right?
Yeah, it's the flesh sacks.
Gosh, I don't know about this crop. Yo,
I
don't know about this catch. You want to throw these ones back?
Yeah, can I? This is the 10 draw. Like, we were just talking about gacha games before this, and it's like, this is the 10 draw that you get. We were like, oh, yeah, yay, a 3-star, like, he's like a big burly guy with armor. I didn't get a girl or a 5-star. That's awesome. I guess that's my draw for the week, and this is like our pull for the next several months of our lives. Not months, but several weeks of our lives. Like, just a bunch of, like, it's here are the categories of season 3 genius players. Shitty older guy who gets by because he has a lot of clout in Korean society.
Sure.
Shitty college kid who's like smarter than his age, but is also like probably shitty in some way.
Mm-hmm.
Women. I did it. That's all. That's everybody.
Okay, like, let's go. Can we go, person by person? Like, okay, so, okay. Kong Young-suk. If you just went by the contents of what he did in the episode, he seems okay, right?
Yeah.
Like, kind of just a chill dude who had an opportunity later in the game. We'll talk about the game. But he had an opportunity to just, like a couple of other players went to him and were like, hey, listen, this doesn't gain you anything, but could you help us out? And he said, sure. And it's like, okay, that's a good guy play. Except that he's got a history of misogyny and sexual misconduct.
Yeah. Kong Young-suk, you get, like, this is the thing he's known for.
Uh-huh.
Is he got, like, kicked off of whatever governmental position that he held, the Grand National Party, due to his negative sexual remarks on women. And also, he's, like, kind of a political bad boy. And it's like, ugh, that's your thing? Like, that got you onto the genius?
And then, when someone brings it up, he's like, yes, that was really hard for me. It's like, go fuck yourself.
Fuck off. There's so much weird shit in this intro, like, in this, like, everyone talking, where I'm like, do you guys not realize that what you're saying is awful? Because I feel like I'm, like, in a different universe or something.
I mean, you're in a different culture.
That's so true. And this is actually related to a comment that we got. But, like, you know, it's important for us to be able to talk about and acknowledge that the players that we're discussing, we have to discuss as players because, you know, we can't look these people up ahead of time. We can't Google them ourselves because we, you know, that would spoil the entire season of the show. But, like, it's important to acknowledge when we find out that, like, yo, some of these people in real life are fucking terrible.
Yeah, we're not going to seek out that knowledge because, as you say, it would ruin the concept of the show. But when just along the way, like, finding out that Young-suk is a piece of shit doesn't ruin the show. But in looking that up, we would see probably how he did in The Genius. But when we come across that information via some other method and, like, hey, listeners, you should feel free to message us and let us know if there's stuff we should know about these people. I don't want to delve too far in their personal lives, but if it's not personal, if it's public about how shitty they are, we should know that. I'll have to trust your judgment on whether we should know on specific people.
Right, and it's kind of two-pronged because it's like what they do in their past, like Dongmin in the past has said so much horrible shit about women and about other people because his whole bit as a comedian is that he's loud and obnoxious and nobody can stop him. That concept as a comedian is, like, bad, and we have tons of that here, and to hear and to look up some of the stuff he's said, and he's even, like, made plenty of rape jokes, and I've looked into players that I loved and talked about in season 2 and found out that they've done similar things, that's common, and that I, like, this guy's on my team, and he has to be on my team because he still fits what I want out of just a genius player. But, like, mm-hmm. You said, it's important to not acknowledge that, like, yeah, in real life, in outside of the spectrum of this game, these people are doing some terrible stuff. But then also, sometimes people are shitty in the game.
Yep.
Like, also in this intro, we get the introduction of Yun-sung, the guy with the cool hair, who is just, like, kind of got, like, a lot of good steely-eyed looks, and he seems really smart. And people at the beginning are like, yo, this is, like, heads up, everybody, this is very racist, what I'm about to quote. Hey, mm-hmm. Have you seen the movie Apocalypto? You look like the Mayans in that movie. And then we get, like, a cut to the footage, and it's like, he looks like the Mayans, haha. It's so fucked, and it's played for a joke.
Yeah, it's...
What are you doing, The Genius? You cannot... This, like, immediately put me off of this season. I'm like, these are the people I'm getting fantasy points for. Like, what's going on?
Yeah, it's not even just like, oh, someone made, like, a racist joke, which is bad enough, but it's like the producer's like, oh, that's great stuff, let's lean into it. Like, I fucking...
Get out of here with that. Get right out of here with that. Go to the doghouse for that. Jesus. Unacceptable. It's so frustrating. And it's like, it's not only like we're watching a show, like you at home are watching a TV show and you're like, oh, I don't like this character, I don't like the actor behind it, but, like, it's just a show that I can detach myself from. We are playing a game with this show and with its players, and we've kind of boxed ourselves into a hole where it's like, yeah, we kind of have to quote-unquote sort of endorse people by saying,
well,
I have this person
on my
team.
We're asking people to listen to our podcast.
That
and the
too.
The point of this podcast has never been, like, a dunk fest on The Genius.
Right. No, this podcast started because you were like, yo, this show seems dope. Do you want to watch it with me and talk about it? And I was like, yeah. Like...
Yeah.
We want to like this. And honestly, there's a lot to like about the content of this episode. There's plenty to like. There's a lot of fun stuff. There's good plays and some this good back and forth. But, like, the people that are in this season are, more often than not, real shitty. Mm-hmm. And the things that they say and the things that the producers of the show lean into comedy-wise are not always fun and good. And it's just really remarkable. Dongmin is the perfect example of this to me. Because in this cold open as well, people are like, oh shit, that guy's here. Because he's so well known in South Korea that it's like, oh, like this famous guy. But he's also known for being a shitlord. Like, they're like, oh, like, ugh, I'm going to beat this. Like, one of the guys is like, I'm going to beat him this week. I need to beat him right away. Because he mm-hmm. comes into it with he already knows the baggage of, like, this guy sucks. So,
well, and it also sounds like the person specifically you're referencing is Kim Jong-hoon, who appears to have personal history with Dongmin as well. But, like, no one's, like, a few people are, like, willing to laugh it off, but, like, no one's happy to see him. Because it's like, oh, this guy's really funny when you're appreciating him on TV and not when you have to deal with him. Maybe that says something.
As a person, week to week, he doesn't seem fun to, right. Maybe think, be self-critical for a minute.
Like, boy, it's really funny when I don't have to deal with this guy. But like, well, okay, maybe then his behavior's fucking problematic.
Right, right. Maybe it's worth somebody challenging on this. Because, like, I actually don't... I didn't notice a ton of, like, sexism towards the women on the show. Not much. I know, like, we'll talk about Shina Young at some point. But, like, she was the... I feel like the woman that got the most camera time. And the most, like, time to make plays and do things in the game. But I don't know. I don't, like, know anything about them. But, like, every time I read about anybody else on the show or anybody makes a joke, I'm just skeeved out. So, like, there's a couple of question marks out there still.
And, I mean, like, there's some stuff. I think this comment... Okay, I'm not going to... I'm not positive who made this comment, so I don't want to tie it to anyone. I don't want to put this on their conscience or whatever. Put this on their reputation. But, like, early on when they were, like, the game rules had been revealed and they were talking about them. One of the guys was like, oh, like, I'm really surprised, like, you know, I think it was, Yeonju was talking and he's like, oh, Yeonju seems surprisingly intelligent. I really didn't expect that. And it's just like, okay, that's not like
IQ
a direct,
156.
Like not a direct insult, but like obviously like pretty blatantly patronizing. And I feel like there's just a lot of that shit. And I mean, there was that shit in seasons 1 and 2 before as Absolutely. Well, right? It just seems like it's harder to ignore with how just across the board gross this episode has been. Songmin did some shitty fucking things to people. Yeah. Like the whole thing with Doohee in the last season was really disrespectful and shitty. Like,
Absolutely.
This stuff happens, but like when it's an isolated moment, you kind of like you sort of tense up and you're like, and then you let it go because. It's a show and they're going to get some things wrong and we all have problematic faves and whatever. But this episode's just so chock full of really stuff I can't tolerate.
Right, exactly. And it often feels like kind of a bit of a double standard too because like Hyunmin comes on and everyone's like, what a nice little boy. Like, what a cool little kid. Hey, it's Keist the genius. Like, hey, how's it going? And he's like friendly and there's no, it doesn't seem that patronizing to him because it's just like, oh, he's a kid, but we're not going to treat him like a kid once he's in the game because it doesn't fucking matter. Like, he's here to play the game.
Right.
But like, if you're a woman on the show, people are going to make that joke about you and then like judge you for the rest of the show because that's like the way the world works. And it sucks.
And I want to move on from this. I really do. Yeah. But, like, there's also the moment where, like, fucking Ah Young is in a bad position in the game, and then it cuts to her, and the emo text is disheveled. It's like, oh, she's losing, so now she's ugly. Like, oh, fuck yourself.
Right, yeah. Just, oof. No, thank you.
Okay, can we... Let's put this behind us and talk about the episode and the events, because I don't know how much runtime I can spend just being upset at the genius for really letting me down.
Sure, it's worth, yeah, it like this was pervasive in my head the whole time watching, but like, yeah, there was also a game happening for sure.
So the game this week was Fruit Stand, and basically the way it worked was that you were assigned two different fruits and you were there were specific groups of fruits based on who had what, and you were trying to sort of barter and work together and do it very much simulates actual price setting in capitalism,
right.
Where it's like, oh, like, think of it like a gas station, right? I feel like that's the most obvious comparison to, I would say, at least Americans, where it's like, oh, hey, if two gas stations are across from each other, if they set different prices, everyone's going to go to the lower price gas station. So they kind of, like, quietly agree to set the same price so that everyone can profit.
Right. It's actually, like, hilarious how capitalism the game is. The whole, like, you know, list your price, balancing, like, listing your price low, but not too low that you still get points. Like, one of my favorite things about the way that they design games in The Genius is they always echo the thing that they're mimicking in real life, like, really well within mm-hmm. the gameplay. And I think this one actually does a really good job of that, of, like, all right, everybody bent. Like, it's like they kind of attempt a form of socialism where they're like, all right, everyone benefits if we all put the same middling number of points in, right? As long as mm-hmm. nobody undercuts anybody else, we all get the equal number of points. And of course, they're like, no, you're going to be cutthroat. You're going to go for four when everyone else bets five, puts down five, and then you're going to get all the money, because why wouldn't you do that? And it's very like capitalism junior in a way that I thought was, like, kind of interesting. I liked the actual setup of the game. Like you said, we're talking about, it's simple enough that it seems like everyone understands it pretty quickly, and people are immediately stepping out, like, being the person who wants to explain the rules, or explaining like what's important and what, like, they want their teams to do, and forming alliances. So they're kind of getting into the swing of things that they do on The Genius, which is good. This game is good at getting people to just make that happen, facilitating that, if you will.
Yeah.
So I want to, sorry, just, like, as we're getting into the whole, like, rules discussion, my boy, your boy, Hui Zhang, is fine. Is here to play.
And he's here to, I'm so glad that I had the right, I feel like I had the right read on him when he turned last season.
Yeah.
Where, like, he feels much more like a dude I'd be friends with, right? Like, the way he's acting, where he's just like, oh, like, he's talking about how important it is to sort of to be humble, but it's also, he can't quite manage to do it at all. Like, there's the part where he's like, I knew it'd be better to stay quiet, but I just can't resist getting involved in a discussion like this. And it's like, that's that. I really connect with that. That's really good stuff.
Yeah.
And then he's just like, I just don't want to die this week. I just don't want to go, like, 0-1 twice in a row. Please, please,
please.
I guess it's 0-12, huh? Actually.
Right, technically. Well, yeah, he manages to be humble as hell and then still knows when to claw his way to victory, because, like, you know, he makes these plays that are all about, like, all right, we're going to work together and it's going to go great. And I know not to be a fool and trust everyone, even if they say that they're telling the truth. Mm-hmm. And he also has that line, I think, he's like, I really don't want to get eliminated. Don't send me to the death match. Like, please let me play the game. And then they're like, hey, so, like, what, you know, things, you played the game before, do you think that you would have won, like, which one of the games in season two would you have done well in? And he's like, all of them, all of the ones that I wasn't in. Like, damn, all right, well, he's got confidence for days, and that's gonna do him well as he's, like, setting up these alliances, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there's sort of different alliances based on the different fruits, and everybody is forming their little clubs and trying for the even, like, we're not going to undercut each other, we're all going to bet evenly. And it works for, I think, the first round, everybody is, like, betting it completely even.
Mm-hmm.
Which is cool. It's like, oh, sometimes the system works, and then it doesn't.
Yeah, well, I mean, the problem, like, honestly, I think it would have been fine. Well, okay, it wouldn't have been fine because of someone. We'll talk about that.
Uh-huh.
But for the most part, it would have been fine until we get some side switching, right?
Yeah.
That's what happens is Kim Yoo-hyun uses, like, you've got the basically the ability to either do a secret one time, which is, like, to hide what the payout was for one type of fruit, or you can switch sides one time. And he switches one of his to Watermelon, which is the majority faction.
Yeah.
And so he's there just to fuck their shit up. If he hadn't done that, I honestly think things would have gone until the twist at the end would have happened either way. But for the most part, I think people would have just played just straightforward and trustworthy. But he throws a wrench in the works and starts mixing things up because he's just there to sabotage them, and they know it. And they kind of neutralize his threat, but in so doing, they start to distrust each other.
Mm-hmm. So. And as soon as somebody undercuts you once, it's like, well, that's it. I have no more reason to trust you. So, like, these alliances are very easy to crumble.
Mm-hmm. It's really, there's a lot of, like, a lot of people saying, like, can I trust you? I don't know if I can trust you, and then trusting them, which I think is, like, mostly a good sign for, like, for, you know, listen, we've seen two seasons of The Genius. I played on a Genius org. You'd have to be a moron to stab people in the back in the first episode. It's going to make things so much harder for you going forward if you just stab them in the back, because first off, first episode, you're not going to gain very much. And secondly, you've just made yourself, like, an enemy to everyone, right?
Yeah.
So no one's going to do that, and so the game is kind of uninteresting, because there's really no twist at the end where someone just randomly does that. Oh. Wait.
Wait a minute. Here's the thing. It totally does happen. Six. I was laughing so much because I'm like, oh, this is cool. We got the Watermelon Guild. They're talking about the Watermelon Battlefield. Like, this Team Watermelon is like, where to focus? And then, wait, what's going on? Wait, how did you undercut me? Like, there's like one round where every single person, every team, every fruit has somebody undercutting, and you're like, holy shit.
But like the Kim Kyung Hoon.
Uh huh.
In the last round, just stabs two alliances, or two groups in the back at once. He wasn't in any danger of losing. He had, Shin Ah Young, like, ride or die with him and just stabbed him in the back. Or stabbed her in the back. And just, like, is over there, like, covering his face with a notepad, just cackling.
It's kind of filmed really well, that moment where it's like,
it's filmed great.
Yeah. Camera pan to this person. What? Camera to this one. What? And then like camera goes up and then like descends downward on him. Like it's like a judging eye of God. And he's just got the thing over his face. Like, oh my God, I fucking did it. I just won the whole game.
And like, listen, if he was like, if he was owning it more, if he was like, yeah, what the fuck is up? I would kind of be into it. Listen, I like a good villain, right? That's fun.
True. Heels are fun.
But he's just like, he's, this is some fucking white collar crime. This is some fucking like.
Skimming off the top. Yeah,
exactly. Right. Like he was caught, you know, fudging the books, and it's like, dude, fuck off.
Yeah.
Like someone like had, you know, was in your exact same position. Was like, listen, I'll do whatever you tell me to. And you fucked him over. And, like, congratulations, you got two garnets out of it and 11 enemies. Like, what is your problem?
And you can't even give your token of life to the person you want to because she's already going to the DM. So you had one ally, and now you have absolutely zero allies. Great
job.
Yeah,
it gives it to Hyunmin, and Hyunmin's like, oh, okay. And you could see the gears turning of Hyunmin, like, oh, this is nice. I'm going to kill you, but this is nice.
This is awesome.
I don't. He's.
She is super one to watch out for. Now I'm already have like a big red flag above Kyung Hoon because like, that's a play, man. That is totally a play. Like you said, he doesn't really commit to it himself, but he did it. Mm-hmm. He super did it. And I'll give him credit for that.
If he lasts two more episodes, I'll be surprised.
Yeah, that's the kind of play that you really shouldn't do this early. It's fun to watch, but it's like, dude, I kept checking our documents, and I was like, shit, is he on any of our teams? Is he gonna like gain or lose us a fuck ton of points soon? And like, no, we're good. We curved that boy.
Huh. Yeah, this main match, it's like there was a lot of stuff that happened, but it kind of was a lot of people running in circles, so we don't have as much to talk about as we might. And so I think we're going to go ahead and kick it to our homework.
Heck yeah. Homework, homework, homework.
Alan, for your homework, for your mega homework for losing Season 2 of The Genius, I made you play Devil May Cry 4 Special Edition.
Ooh.
I believe this is your first character action game, right?
I've played Bayonetta. I haven't finished it, but I played Bayonetta.
Okay.
I don't remember. And I've played God of War, if that counts, but it doesn't really.
No, not really.
Yeah. Devil May Cry 4, my first Devil May Cry game, and boy, what an experience. So, this game is fascinating, y'all. This, I guess, originally came out in 2008 on the PlayStation 3. It is the fourth Devil May Cry game. When I was a kid, I always had heard that Devil May Cry was really cool, and that it had a really weird story and that one of them was like a prequel. Some of those things are true. It turns out this comes from a time of game development where you could just make a like arena fighting, like single player fighting action game with like the barest of stories to get you moving along. Like, it's basically an excuse to just have environments for you to sprint through. You're playing as this guy, Nero. The game starts with you in a church with your girlfriend, Kyrie. And then you're, like, watching a big sermon from a big pope. And then this guy, Dante, just comes and stabs the pope. And you're like, what the frick, Dante? And then he, like, leaves and you fight him in a really boring tutorial. And then you just, like, chase him around the universe? Like the whole entire planet. Like, you go from churches to cities to like rural areas into the forest into factories. And it really, I think the fighting game comparison is super appropriate because you're kind of just going through stages. And there is so, like I said, there's so little narrative thread taking you between it, but it's all good. It's all held together by like some of the best combat in like a video game. It's too good.
It's really fun. It is like, I don't know, if you're not familiar, or if you only played DMC, the reboot, I guess, the spin-off reboot. It is important to emphasize just how little sense the story makes. Because the story actually, what they tell you totally makes sense, right?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Dante, like, busted in and shot up this place, and he's a bad guy, and you need to go get him. And then that's just the story you get for, like, 8 missions for numerous hours. And it's like, okay, I went through this, like, snowfield, and I arrived at a church. And he's not the church, so I'll walk through this waterfall. And the waterfall goes to a jungle, and the jungle go to ruins. Am I still chasing? What am I doing?
What happened to Dante? And I think that's really funny in the context of this being the fourth game in a franchise where, like, the star character is this dude Dante, who's just like the portrait of early 2000s cool, and they're like, and it's not as brilliant as what I've heard about Metal Gear Solid 2's like character flip, but it's just really funny to be like, I'm chasing, like, the character is chasing Dante and the player is also like, where's Dante? Like, that's the game I bought. It's Devil May Cry 4 starring Dante, who's this fucking very similar looking but shitty like teenage boy. And it takes you 10 missions before they're like, oh shit, Dante. Yeah, that guy. Do the same game again, but backwards. But we'll give you Dante this time. Sure, why not? And it's so ridiculous. It's like, no. It's so funny.
It's part of why I chose this one for you is I don't think Devil May Cry 4 is the best Devil May Cry, but the ways in which it's flawed are really interesting. Like, the fact that it's just like, I guess they just decided, like, with the scope of their budget, like, oh, okay, we need to have Dante be playable. Let's just do the same missions again. And he'll fight the same bosses. And it'll be fine. It's like, okay.
Right, because when you look at it in the context of, single-player action games from this era, I can understand why some people, like, completely brush this one off. Because it's like, you go forward as a character you don't know. There's barely any story. And then you get the character you know, but then you just go backwards. And that sounds like super like shitty and lazy. But again, when you come back to this, like, it's about the combat. It's not about like the story or the thing holding it together. And the combat changes fundamentally halfway through. That makes a lot more sense because they're just giving you more scenarios and adding like enemy types and giving you different powers and different upgrade paths. And like that is where the meat and the balance and the game design comes in.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very simple to understand but hard to master system where you have a basic melee attack, you have a sort of claw grab ability, and then you have a gun, and you get other things added onto those, like you can sort of charge your sword to do more damage, or you can charge your gun after certain upgrades, but that's kind of it. And then like different directions that you move while doing those things will get you completely different abilities. And yeah, you kind of like put in slightly different inputs and you're trying to rack up combos against these enemies. I really enjoyed playing this game on easy because it just turns it into a like practice arena. Like none of the enemies hit you basically on easy. It's not the kind of easy where it's like, if you're really bad, you're still going to lose. Like, I didn't. The only thing that even gave me any trouble at all was, like, the later bosses. But I, like, never. I didn't even know how to use health items. I never needed to. So for me, it was more a matter of, like, enjoying the space and understanding combos and, like, creating combos on my own. And I found that really fun. I thought that was a ton of fun. Like, I understand some of the appeal to some people was this came from the era of, like, hard games are cool. But turning the difficulty down just took that away and made it just like a really free form sort of like ocean for me to explore this really intricate combat system.
The only problem I have with the lower difficulties, and like I don't have any problem with anyone who wants to play it on a lower difficulty, but one of the main reasons I tend to turn the difficulty up is just like, it sounds like this sounds like ridiculous to an outsider, but like really seriously play it and you'll see what I mean. Your ability to do combos gets limited in earlier difficulties just because the enemies die
too fast. Yeah.
it's just like you're trying to do this rat. You're like, okay, I'm gonna like rush in and do this running slash, and then I'll knock them in the air and I'll shoot them with a two-handed shot, and then they're dead. I had like seven more things planned. Like, yeah. Come on.
It's like playing against. It's like again. I hate to go back to the same reference, but it's like playing a fighting game where you're like, oh, the AI is too easy. I need to fight against people. I need it to get harder. Somebody kick my ass.
Yeah, totally.
And like it is the boss fights that kind of do that. They all feel really unique and special. I think my favorite boss fight was easily the I forget the character's name, but the guy who turns into an angel that you fight on top of the big platform. That one is fantastic because it feels like this combat system is best suited to when you're fighting enemies that are close to your size, I think. Cause you know, the first boss of the game being this like fire hell demon is like cool. And it hints at, like, some of these developers going on to make things like Bayonetta, where it was, like, more of a spectacle action game. But when you're fighting a guy that's, like, your size and has similar abilities to you and can counter your abilities the way that you do, it's like, oh, yeah, I have to treat you like a person. I have to know when to dodge and how to counter and, like, where to find an opening, you know? Like, it's completely different from the way you fight enemies or other boss fights. Mm-hmm. It's really creative and unique in that way. And I again, even though the enemies were dying really fast, I still like managed to make some cool stuff happen, and it was just really fun. It's just got like it's so buttery smooth to control. It's like a perfect 60 frames per second on PC. Like it feels, you know, if I have a big negative about it, like I think everything you do that's not combat is really dumb and feel like it's kind of wasting your time.
Yeah,
like, totally. Everything else like. They introduced this mechanic early on where there's these like big spinning tops that are hovering, and if you hit them with your claw, then you push them, and if you hit them with your sword, you make them go faster, and you have to open doors by hitting them with these things, and it's just like there's a part where you're just kicking one down a hallway, and it's like, why am I doing this? What is the context for this? Why do I care? I can use it to kill enemies, I guess. That's pretty neat, but like, I don't know. And then sometimes the game tries to have platforming really briefly. Like, they use the claw as a grappling hook, and you have to, like, time it to a ceiling falling on you, or falling with spikes. And that's bad, because there's not a lot of precision in, like, when you let go of the jump and stuff. And there's another part where you're crossing from one church building to another, and there's, like, glass, stained glass panels above an abyss, and they appear and disappear randomly. And you just have to jump the millisecond that they're about to disappear, and it sucks because if you fall, you have to do a whole combat encounter. It's just like, ugh, why? Like, don't. And I get it. Like, it's almost charming to see that stuff where I'm like, oh, this is like 2008 busted. I'm like nostalgic for this kind of busted. But I don't want to play it. I don't want to do this part.
It.
But I hate it. I played these games.
Yeah. No, I hear you. I remember there was one thing that I wish they could kind of carried over from Devil May Cry 1. Which is that, so you played far enough to get your Devil Trigger, right? Your super mode.
Yes.
So in Devil May Cry 1, if you had the sword equipped, your Devil Trigger was just like, you turned into like this like humanoid
beast
bat
mode.
Demon guy.
Yeah.
And the side effect of this was that like, oh look, there's a really annoying set of platforms. I'm going to turn into a bat and fly past them. Just fucking skip it.
Fuck yeah, that sounds very good.
That's sorely missed, I would say, in Devil May Cry 4, where there are some parts where it's just like, yeah, as you say, the grappling part with the spike ceiling is just awful.
Yeah, I watched you do a stream of this game for Scanline, and like the two things I noticed were, A, yeah, you were like, wait, I had a cool combo set up. The game's not hard enough for me to keep this combo running. And then also you got to that platforming thing and also got stuck on it and like quit because you're like, oh, this sucks. Like, even when you're good at the rest of the game, this just sucks. There is no way to, I mean, there's probably some like, someone out there is probably gonna be like, I did it in one try. I don't know what you're talking about. But like, no, it feels broken.
it's just an unrelated, it's badly tuned. And it's also just a skill that's completely unrelated to the rest of the game. And you don't get very many chances to exercise it. When you do, it sucks.
Exactly. So. It's weird because they don't make games like this anymore. They can't.
Well, they are making a Devil May Cry 5 coming March 9th, I believe, 2019. But I assume it will not have the puzzly stuff as much.
Yeah, well, modern single-player games that have that puzzly stuff always are actually a lot better about like guiding you and making it obvious what you need to do, and then at some point just like hand-holding for you. Sure. I'm almost 100% sure they won't have the bad platforming stuff, because like, come on, you guys. In a world where the Tomb Raider games are out and like the Uncharted games are out, you can figure out how to make a 3D platformer work, and not, even if you're not Mario, like, you can make jumping feel good.
In Devil May Cry 5, he loses his, Nero's in it, and he loses his like his claw arm, his Devil Bringer, and he gets it replaced with various mechanical arms you can swap out. And one of them just like fires like a missile, and you can jump and ride on it. So I guess you could ride past any platforming segments.
Oh, fuck! It's like Fortnite. It's just like they're taking ideas from Fortnite.
At all, you know, I did think it was pretty weird that whenever you completed a mission, it said like Victory Royale. That did seem strange.
So is that, it's DMC 5? So it's not a sequel to DMC Devil May Cry. It's a sequel to this game.
Right.
Interesting. So
we could have a whole conversation about that. I don't know that we have time.
Yeah, right. There's like a manga to this game. I was like, if I did want to care about the lore, is there lore? And it's like, yeah, you can read a manga, and that's kind of it. The guy who made it made a manga. That's what you get. And you can play the other games. But like, you were telling me, like, was it 2 where like Dante straight up never speaks?
I think he speaks like twice or something. But yeah, like most cutscenes are him just like glowering at people.
Yeah, it's one of those games where, like, even in this one, your main guy doesn't talk that much. I was very much ready for Nero to be, like, annoying, like, all right, chili dogs, kick ass, and chew bubblegum kind of guy, but he's, like, mostly quiet. It's the villains who do a lot of, like, blustering and yelling and like, stomping their feet when they die kind of thing.
Yeah.
At one point, you fight a glass window, and it's also kind of a weird boss fight.
Yeah. Yeah, this game has a lot of strange choices.
You throw swords at it, which is a move.
With swords that are also demons? When you grab them, swords. They turn into swords? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's great. So, I think I'm now excited to see what's up with 5. That's where I'm at.
Hey, we have our 0 to 5 scale. We could make them garnets again.
We could now that we make have garnets again.
You want to do that?
Yeah, I mean, that's more useful than like, a handful of points.
Okay.
I'll give you 4 points for this.
All right. I got 4 more garnets. That's great.
Because I think I didn't expect this game to be what it was, and that's kind of cool.
Excellent. Well, with that established, I think we're ready to talk about our death match. So, this is Shina Young. And she's playing against Quan Jury. This is 2 of my players facing off. So
wait, do you have Jury?
Uh-huh.
Wow. Who would have thunk it?
Yeah, no, I'm ready to redraft. That's how this is going to go.
Wait, no, you don't.
I don't?
No, 6 you have.
Wait, no, I don't.
No, you have Kim Yoo-hyun. Like, what are you?
Wait, okay, then I gave myself the wrong fantasy point.
Oh, nice. Did you count the fantasy points for other players?
I counted the fantasy points for everyone.
Okay.
Why don't you talk about the DM, and I will quietly in the background figure out what my actual
rapidly
points are.
Type. Yeah. Okay, so the DM, it's Pokemon Black and White 2, so it's the sequel to Black and White. And if people remember last season, Black and White was not one of our favorite DMs because it felt really simple. It's like too simple and not in the like exposition shock kind of way, but in the like I figured this out in 5 minutes and it's boring. I had a couple of notes. One, I really didn't, I just like on an aesthetic level, I did not like the musical choices for this DM. I think this is the time where you break out all the good stops. Like, right before the DM started, they randomly dropped the House MD theme song in there. And I was like, genius.
Is that what that was?
Yeah, the dun 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 dun. That song, yeah, that's the House theme song. I was like, not sure what it was, and then it kicked into the chorus, and I was like, yeah, I know what this is. It's weird. It doesn't have the vocals, though, which is just fine. So bad musical choices. There's a lot of, like, bad, shitty death metal in this DM, where he's just like, we're playing Black and White 2.
It felt really, like, it was one of those things where I was like, this is not something I recognize, but it sounds just like something I recognize.
Yeah.
And I was like, what is the thing I recognize? I'm not fucking... So it just sort of drove me crazy. It could just be that all that kind of metal sounds the same.
Yes, exactly. That's, well, again...
To me.
Thank you. That's what I was like, to me also, but if someone out there like knows more about metal, then like they're probably hearing that. Like, oh, excuse me. Yeah. So I didn't love the musical choices. I did love the thing that the device that they make their number choices on is... It's just an iPad. Like, it has, like, the really laggy stylus. There's a part where Ayoung is, like, writing a 10 on her stylus, and it, like, doesn't type for a couple seconds, and you're like, yeah, that's an iPad. And it even has the iOS interface in the top, and you're like, this is... Someone put an iPad into a podium and got that to work and look good. My main problem with the gameplay was that I do think Ayoung deserved this victory, but I've never been a fan of the play that wins you a DM where you just kind of like hope the other person doesn't get lucky. Like her play is basically like, I will start high and then you burn up all my points early and then I just have to not lose at the end and then I win the whole thing.
Well, I mean, there was no luck because there was no random factor to it.
Or true, because she's, you know, she's doing all the she has like done all the math and figured out what points people have left.
And also, the only two factors are what people are picking, so there's nothing random.
Did I understand the rules correctly in that you have a bank of points that you can put in, and you just have to pick a higher number than the other person? But once you use up your points, like your thing goes down, your total number of remaining points you can use goes down.
Yeah, so the numbers the lights indicate like sort of what the level of points you have left.
The range of
points, it's like, right. It's like it's just dropping down by chunks of 20%. So when you hit thresholds, it drops down.
Right.
And yeah, so it's just like you're gauging based on like how much the light has changed each time they've done. It's like, okay, the number, it's like it's white and it went down, that means they must have done this, and so you have sort of like a range of possibilities in any given moment. But as I say, nothing is actually random because everything is a deliberate choice by both players.
And yeah, so she just... But then how does she win if that's true, then, if it's not random?
She wins because the end of it was like, if Quan Jury had bet on... Had just basically been like, I'm going to bet big. Basically, if Quan Jury had said, like, she's going to spend some points here, because there were three rounds left, right?
Yep.
And Quan Jury had to win all of them to win the overall... I should just say Jury. I don't know why I'm saying her first and last.
Or Jury
had to win all three of them, and so basically she was trying to be conservative and be like, I'm only going to spend, like, the 1 point here, because I bet that Ah Young is going to put in a zero here and save her points for some kind of final showdown.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Ah Young is like, if this is like, if we both play this logically, I lose. So I'm going to gamble that she's going to be too conservative here. And she was right.
And it works out.
Mm-hmm.
It just seemed like at the end she could have lost it all really quickly, and I would have been disappointed had that happened, but then it kind of ends up being a sweep.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, you thought I was going to play a zero and I played a one. Congratulations, you played yourself. I win.
Yep.
I don't know. The thing is, like, that, because of that, I don't... This doesn't, like, solidify Ayoung as, like, an amazing DM player to me. It's like, oh, she did pretty well and got by on, like, a good final moment.
Well, I think for the most part, the game was played really, like, sensibly and well on both of their parts. Uh-huh. Ayoung made a bit of a mistake where she, like, did 28 when she should have done 25, and she says that herself. She's like, wait, I should have done 25 there. I don't know what I was thinking. and that bit of nerves nearly cost her the game. Because, like, if you think about it, so at the last three rounds, Ah Young had 2 points left,
mm-hmm.
and Jury had 9 points left, right?
Uh-huh.
If Jury had put in a three all three times, she had a guaranteed win. There was nothing Ah Young could have done about that. So really, true. The answer there... That's really, the answer there is that she's more, like, that... Yeah, well, both of them messed up, but I would say Jerry sort of screwed up more.
It's right. It's the ultimate DM outcome, which is both of us messed up. One of us messed up just a little bit more, just like a tiny bit more. I basically was watching this, going like, man, is Ah Young really just gonna like sweep this right now? Is that what's gonna happen? And then is Six gonna like have to redraft immediately? That's kind of boring. And then she won, and I was kind of happy about it. Judy didn't really have a lot of time to, like, do anything, so it's not like the Hui Zhang thing where it's like, damn, you went in and then you lost. It's like, I didn't even notice her during the main match. She was just kind of playing.
Yeah,
and then she left. Totally. And that's honestly a fine way to leave week one. I don't think there's any shame in that.
Yeah, you know, sometimes you put your whole heart out on the table, and it's not good enough, and you have to go home because you have got a bad heart, and you got to talk to your family because it's probably a chronic condition. And
my God,
I don't know how much life you have left.
Oh my God, we're gonna have to plug you in.
Are we? Because I feel like we have to talk about fantasy points.
Shit, it just felt like such a good segue to the plug zone, but there's like an hour of the show left. Okay, so yeah, rock me Amadeus with these fantasy points.
Okay, so our totals this week. So as far as my base level of points, I had 19 points. However, I also, that's from my three players, my three contestants. Uh-huh. I'm a player. That's our accepted terminology. However, I also got 4 points from cooperation between players where they are in various teams together. So that comes to 23 points, and that means I also have 4 garnets because they gained me 4 garnets, and then I get 4 from my homework, so I've got 8 garnets now.
Delicious.
Alan, you gained yourself 23 base fantasy points.
Yay.
Unless you got co-op points, that means we tied. You got co-op points. You got 4. It's
20, you 27. Counted this.
Yeah, I know. I should have fade up some music, you know, just dun-dun-dun-dun. It's a little suspenseful. You know, it's real. It's editing.
You can still do that. You didn't change your garnet count here though, because you have more garnets, but I have more points, which is interesting. That's a great place for us to be starting off.
It is. So yeah, with our fantasy garnets, you already should have heard the episodes, the little mini episodes where we talked about what you can do with fantasy garnets. For the moment, I'm gonna hold off. I could do something, but I'm not gonna.
You're gonna continue to rely on this team. They're doing you pretty well. I think Hui Zhang got you some points for... He definitely had a good dealer moment. I know Dong Min also had a good dealer moment.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the two that I picked up on. I was like, oh, hell yeah. I got really anxious when it turned out that Dong Min was kind of like shitty. Because I was like, no. This guy seems exactly like the type of person who's going to lose me fantasy points. Like, please don't hemorrhage my victory this season. Please, man.
He did get some excessive verbal confrontation. Uh-huh. Because he was kind of an asshole.
Uh-huh. I was like, I saw that, and I'm like, oh, God. That was exactly the moment where I was like, am I going to, like, find myself, like, hey, Six, how many points did I get? And then V's going to be like, oh, negative 100. Great. Good job. You did it. So far, so good. But I got my eye on him.
To those of you sitting at home, obviously the sheets are available to show you what points various people got. But obviously the big winner for today is Dong Min. And then the big loser is, of course, Jury for going home with a negative 5.
Mm.
Of note, Kim Kyung-hoon, you might have thought would get more points, but he betrayed an ally for garnets, so he only ended up with 3.
Womp. Womp. I'm really glad. This is, whenever people are getting pluses and minuses all over the place, that's how I know our point system works.
Yeah, I was happy with how things went, and mm-hmm. I also was happy with the fact that, Kyung-hoon went home barely richer for being a scumbag. Like, yeah, no, fuck you.
He's gonna get completely screwed. He's gonna get farted over next week.
I guess we will see on the next episode of The Garnet Wager. every episode of the Garnet Wager, of course, is bookended. Not bookended, just ended. Your bookend is like on either ends, right? Or is that a sandwich?
Bookend is both sides. Sandwich is both sides. There's meat in both of them.
What's the one that's just on one end?
Capped,
is that just like a...
Capped off?
Sort of like plugged?
What about the homework? What about
Damn
the homework?
It, you got me this time.
Yeah. It's okay.
All right, go ahead. Give me homework.
I'm giving us homework.
Right. I'm sorry. That's our new system. Is that is that the winner picks homework for both people? I'm fine.
Okay, it's fine. We're here. We're all humans. So, for those not in the know, this season on the Garnet Wager, we're changing up the way we do homework. So instead of it being sort of like a punishment or a thing that we drop on one person, we're gonna try and do these together, like with intent, instead of like, oh, I also played the game I assigned you 10 years ago. And they're obviously not always going to be games, but this week it is going to be a game. I am going to be playing Overwatch with Six.
I've played Overwatch before.
I know that, but we're gonna have some fun. We're gonna play some custom games. We're gonna do like non-traditional Overwatch. We're gonna do some custom games. We're gonna choose some mystery heroes. We're gonna do the stuff that like we don't always do in Overwatch. We're not gonna play quick play, is what I'm saying.
Okay.
And we're gonna try and like explore. I have ideas. I'll talk to you off mic about it. I kind of want to like get into this game that has a really like fine hard way to play it and not play it that way. Because there's no right way to play a game. So we'll go on that adventure together and talk about it next week.
It's like they always say: there's no wrong way to eat an M&M.
What? You? Wow. That's deep.
I just took somebody else's, like, a different candy's, like, catchphrase and just plugged my own thing in because it's the plug zone.
No. Thank you.
We've had three plug zone transitions. They've all been... I think they've been worse every time.
Is that... it's the way... That's our brand. There has to be a wrong way to eat a Reese's, though. That's what you're referencing,
I mean,
right?
That they say there isn't... But, like, if you like, explain to them, like, that time you infused it into some, like, vodka and then put it up your butt, I bet they'd be unhappy.
I did also think about putting it up your butt, so thanks, brain.
Yeah. Sure. It's me, your brain, no problem.
Oh, my God, I'm talking to my brain on a podcast. Plug it in. So, I am not on social media. Sorry, I was like, what's the word for the thing that I'm not on anymore? I'm not on social media anymore, folks, so you can actually just listen to me every week on another podcast called Chats, a television podcast that is found on Simplecast, chatspod.simplecast.fm, or wherever you listen to those. It's where my friend John and I talk about TV shows. We are a quarter of the way, I think, through Babylon 5 Season 1, and you should hop on if you're interested in a sci-fi show that is surprisingly good from the jump. Peep that.
But if you need to get a hold of... you don't need to. But if you feel like you need to get a hold of a member of the Garnet Wager on social media, I'm at SixDetmar on Twitter. That's SixDetmar. And if you want to find out more about work that I do, I am part of the Scanline Media Network, and there's a little bumper at the end of the episode. I need to record a new bumper, because those samples are mad old, and also Alan bitches to me constantly about the Garnet Wager one.
Do I use that verb to you constantly, Six? Is that true that I'm that annoying about it? Am I really just, like, that annoying and you're just tolerating me? Is that what's going on?
I mean, you know, I wouldn't have said it out loud, except for
wow.
I did, I guess.
Wow, this is the meanest you've ever been. Anyways, can you imagine giving someone, we're going to go right past how mean that was. Can you imagine giving somebody your Discord handle over, like, a podcast plug segment? That'd be really weird.
I really can't. I would never do it. Like, I for a moment, I was like, well, where can they reach? No.
That's like giving someone your phone number. That's weird. You can find me on some Discord servers. If you find my handle there, then you can send me a message and politely ask if you want to be friends. But, like, I'm not giving you my handle. No, fuck that. Yeah, that's what we got going on. That's our lives.
Indeed. Excited for the next episode of The Genius Season 3, hoping that the boys are less shitty.
But we know there probably won't be. Dun, yeah. Dun, 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 dun.
Also, hey, guess what?
What?
The death match was two women. Thanks, everybody.
Bye.
Peace out. You're listening to a Scanline Media Network podcast. Check out our other podcasts, like Bottle Crow Reborn. So here's the thing, Nick.
Nobody cares.
No.
It's not about that.
You actually convinced me.
Shit.
The Garnet Wager. And immediately we get Yunji being like, so hang on. Why does everyone call Jin-Ho Kong? And Jin-Ho, like, really circuitously explains because they're making fun of me.
Like, it means bean, but it's all, like, small person, and, like, I'm...
Neutral game.
So, if you reverse the frame data, you can still play the game, and it'll just sometimes take longer to figure some stuff out.
Operation Serial.
Episode 4 yep. was a bit more understandable, but also, I continue to sour on these kids. I think they're dicks.
Okay, that's fair.
And our patron-only podcast, Oops All Anime.
And he has the blessed privilege of getting an invite. He shreds it in front of her, looks her in the eye, like touches
wipes
her face,
a tear off of her eye.
Wipes a tear off her eye and goes, I'll kill you.
Visit Scanline Media at scanlinemedia.com and our Patreon at patreon.com/scanlinemedia.